From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
Tens of thousands of pro-government marchers flooded Venezuela's streets to stand up against an attempted coup by the right-wing opposition. Protesters chanted they will not return, speaking about the coup plotters, and if the people get mad, the right wing is done. Venezuela's socialist president Nicolas Maduro said he was determined to defend his homeland and the people.
Estoy decidido a defender mi patria y a defender al pueblo.
Meanwhile, supporters of the right-wing members of the National Assembly continued to clash with police as they tried to reach areas where Maduro's supporters had assembled. Those protests followed a massive march a week earlier, marking the 15th anniversary of an attempted coup against then-President Hugo Chavez, which Chavez said was engineered in Washington. For more on all that, we speak with our reporter from south of the border, Tony Solo, via Skype from Nicaragua.
The regional right wing and their U.S. masters see this as perhaps their last opportunity to be able to force a crisis in Venezuela that will lead to some kind of definitive result in their favor. And I think people are very familiar, I should imagine, by now with the idea of the kind of soft power revolutions, the velvet revolutions, or whatever you want to call them, the orange revolutions that have happened around the world over the last, 10 years?
Yeah.
And that what we're seeing in Venezuela is very much, it looks very much like what you saw at the very beginning of the crisis in Syria, or the very beginning of the crisis in Libya, where you've got shock troops, as it were, armed gangs engaging in really quite savage acts of violence, but still not quite at a level that requires a military response. And the next stage presumably will be some kind of attempt to foment a military action of some kind that will require a military response and that will then serve as a basis for calls for intervention. And Nicolas Maduro, the Venezuelan president, has explicitly said that what the current crisis and the intensity of the crisis is a deliberate attempt guided by strategists in the United States government to provoke a crisis that will enable them to legitimize some kind of intervention in Venezuela so that the U.S. elites get what they want, which is control of Venezuela's oil in the first place.
Yeah.
But also they want to destroy the Bolivarian Revolution,
right,
in Venezuela, because it's such a beacon of hope and support and solidarity for progressive movements throughout the region, throughout the Caribbean,
right,
throughout Central America, throughout South America.
Yeah, let's go to that for a minute, because just to give people a little context on what we're talking about. First of all, it's 14 years ago this month that they attempted a coup, that actually accomplished a coup for about a day in Venezuela, and that was only 4 years into the Bolivarian experiment, as it was called at the time. And
right,
what we're talking about essentially is a spark that took place in Venezuela in 1998, represented by the election of Hugo Chavez as president of the country, to a region-wide project of solidarity that supported mutually the sovereignty and the right of self-determination and free association of the countries of the region of the hemisphere, saw the rise of ALBA and from that many other multilateral institutions that afforded the 600 million people of the region some dignity and some power on the world stage as self-defined actors. And that project with Venezuela at the heart of it, has been a target of the U.S., which seeks hegemony and has had it for 200 years and change in the region. And so that is one of the reasons, I would say the principal reason, that Venezuela has been, after Cuba perhaps, but even more so in some ways, public enemy number one on Washington's hit list.
Yeah, and Venezuela has been a tremendous support for progressive governments ever since. Hugo Chavez and Fidel Castro devised and designed what was originally Petrocaribe and then Alba. I can't remember which came first. They more or less happened at the same time. There are two. Petrocaribe is a regional initiative supporting the energy needs of countries in the Caribbean area, a total of 18, might be 19 now, countries in Central America and the Caribbean, including right-wing governments. So it's got nothing to do with ideology. It's a genuine development cooperation initiative by Venezuela, designed by Hugo Chavez and Fidel Castro back in 2004. And the wider ALBA framework, likewise, is a principally a development cooperation and economic cooperation block. But in the case of the ALBA countries, most of those countries do have a strong ideological bias in favor of progressive and socialist politics.
Yeah, you know, let me just go on that question of ideology for a second, because agreed that the latter ideology that you describe, the progressive ideology, is not, you know, the coin of the realm in these multilateral institutions, but rather people can come in, you know, from any ideological perspective and participate in these things. But there is a distinction between an ideology that accepts the self-agency and sovereignty and right of free association and self-determination of these countries on the one hand, that is, a shared ideology among those that are participating, and the ideology of hegemony that says, no, you're not allowed to do that, do what I'm telling you. And that's where the ideological break is with the United States.
Yeah, absolutely. And U.S. diplomacy hasn't changed in decades. It continues to be do what we want or else. And you're seeing that in Venezuela. And you can see why did Barack Obama and why has Donald Trump, why do they maintain this ridiculous decree, this ridiculous presidential decree, identifying Venezuela as a threat to the national security of the United States? It's completely ridiculous. Yep. And Venezuela has been a very reliable commercial partner in terms of supplying oil to the United States for decades, and that hasn't changed under Nicolas Maduro. It was the same under President Hugo Chavez. So what is that about? What is this designation by the U.S. presidents with very superficially very different ideas in the United States? In the United States, it probably looks as though superficially Barack Obama was very different ideologically to Donald Trump, but from outside the United States, right, they look identical.
Yeah, and actually, some people had hoped that Trump was ideologically different because he had promised to be. Let's look at what's happening in Venezuela right now and hear the echo from the RNC, where Trump said, no more regime change. And that's exactly what's underway right now, an attempt at regime change.
Yeah, and nobody should be fooled by the corporate media coverage of events in Venezuela. What's happening here is a very clear pattern that's been well established in other countries, as I said earlier. And one has to look at why at this moment is there this crisis in Venezuela. There are internal reasons, but there are also external reasons. And one of the external reasons is the recent electoral triumph by Lenin Moreno in Ecuador, who put a full stop to the advance of right-wing ideology by hook or by crook across the region.
I would say perhaps Daniel Ortega did that before Moreno did, but yes.
Well, yeah, but in terms of South America, Nicaragua was very, very much the exception in Central America, which is totally dominated by the United States in terms of its regional relations. In terms of South America, and it was really, really important for Lenin Moreno to win the presidential election in Ecuador. And I think that sent a shiver up the spine of the regional right wing, who thought they were on a roll after the electoral victory of Mauricio Macri in November 2015, imposing his neoliberal agenda in Argentina with the results that are we can all see now, massive popular rejection there in Argentina of that right-wing neoliberal agenda. And in Brazil, they had to resort to a constitutional coup, for which now all the truth is coming out about the nature of the Brazilian political establishment, in particular the right wing political establishment, because I think if there's a senator or a representative in the Brazilian National Congress that is free of some kind of taint of corruption, they're very much the exception. The great majority are caught up in the Odebrecht scandal. Odebrecht, that is the big Brazilian and multinational engineering company, a huge company of world prestige. And over the years, Odebrecht has systematically corrupted the Brazilian political system and also the political systems in other countries through South America. And that was one of the factors that led to Lenin Moreno's victory in Ecuador, because his opponent, Lasso, was perceived as being too corrupt. That's another story. Yeah.
A lot of those stories, though, too, aren't there?
Right. There's another external factor as well, and that's the peace process in Colombia and what that may mean in the 2018 elections, the presidential elections in May 2018 in Colombia. And what you're seeing in Colombia is a very fractured political scene, with the different parties across the political spectrum unable to form a consolidated, powerful political bloc capable of winning outright the elections in May. And it's really important for the ruling elite in Colombia that they can point to Venezuela and say, well, see, this is what happens if you elect a progressive government. And that is also an external factor that is driving part of the crisis in Venezuela. Now, if you look at what's happening inside Venezuela, and the situation there is that in terms of political support, of core political support, very little has changed. And you still have an opposition that has around 35%, 30 to 35% support. And you still have a government that has between 35 and 40% support. If you look at the history, at the electoral history of Venezuela, that's how the power has been distributed over the last, ever since 1998, really, when President Hugo Chavez first took office. And then, so what does that mean? That means that, as in elections elsewhere throughout the region, what determines whether one political force or the other gets into power or gets into office is the don't knows, the kind of floating voters, which in Venezuela amount to something like between 20 and 25%. But if you look at the demonstrations that were held on the 19th, which was supposed to be a decisive day, the right wing said that they were going to march and that they were going to demonstrate that they had overwhelming support. Right. Well, they were unable to do that. And it, despite what was reported in the corporate media outlets, the Western NATO country propaganda outlets, for example, I always check out what The Guardian's saying to know what there the enemy is projecting.
Yep.
The UK Guardian. And the UK Guardian very clearly reported the demonstrations on the 19th in favour of the opposition, when in fact the government supporters staged a demonstration that was at least as big, if not bigger, than that of the opposition.
Yeah, look, it looks
and
bigger.
And then the whole way that the violence is presented, there were three deaths on the 19th, and unless I've missed a report, and they've all turned out to be provoked by the opposition.
Yeah.
And now you have this situation where the opposition they think that with one last push over this weekend, they'll be able to bring down the government of President Maduro, or force some kind of denouement, some kind of intervention, by their tactics of mass demonstrations, using gangs of, kind of, as it were, shock troops to provoke violence. And the latest incident that will definitely not be reported in the corporate media is the armed gangs attack in Caracas, attacked a maternity hospital, right, and forced the evacuation of 54 infants, yeah, who are at risk from the terrorist violence of the Venezuelan opposition gangs.
Yeah, now let's go back to Iraq and the incubator babies back in 1991 or whatever it was, and the media storm that created, and the white helmets with a picture of a Syrian kid, and the media storm that created. And let's talk about how nobody's talking about here this attack on a maternity hospital by the right wing.
Yeah, and of course that won't get reported. You will not read that in the corporate media in the United States or Western Europe,
right?
Because we go with that. This takes us back all the way to Harold Pinter's well-known remarks when he made his speech accepting the Nobel Prize for Literature. Harold Pinter, the very well-known British dramatist, and he said that United States policy is kind of witty, he was the word that he used, because it's the war crimes perpetrated by the United States never happened, and because you never read about them. And why is that? Because the United States government and the Western and its allied Western NATO governments control the corporate media in a way that would make old-style Pravda, it would put old-style Pravda in the Soviet Union to shame.
Right.
You know, so you will not read. Anything approaching a balance, and even if you accept the kind of conventional journalistic concept of balance, even if you accept that, and I don't, you'll never get a balanced account of events in Venezuela from the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Guardian, Le Monde, Die Welt, all the El País, you know, all these major corporate media outlets. Their job is to suppress the reality of what's going on in Venezuela. And if you read the corporate media coverage of Venezuela, they report all the negative stuff that's going on,
right,
the shortages in the supermarkets. They won't report why those shortages are in the supermarkets,
right,
because there's an effective economic boycott and a long-term campaign of economic sabotage by the extremely powerful business sector in Venezuela, which its most important components are completely co-opted by the most extreme right wing. In Venezuela, people like Leopoldo López, who's serving a sentence for having provoked murderous violence back in 2001, when was it, 2014?
Yeah.
And Henry Capriles, who's caught up in the Odebrecht scandal. And Henry Capriles has been, because of his involvement in the Odebrecht scandal, which is has affected countries across South America, and he's been the electoral authority issued a ruling making it impossible for him to run as a candidate for 10 years, because, oh, I think, was it 10 or 15? A long period of time, anyway. He won't be eligible to run for public office because he was convicted of involvement in the Odebrecht corruption scandal. Now, that hasn't been reported. What gets reported in the corporate media is that Henry Capriles has been denied the right to run as the candidate, full stop, and you don't get the context. And, or if you do get the context, it's reported in an extremely slanted way. Mm-hmm. So there is a very real crisis in Venezuela. It's a crisis that's been deliberately provoked ever since the death of Hugo Chavez back in 2015. By the extreme right wing in Venezuela. The immediate cause of the current crisis is the fact that the Venezuelan opposition refused to accept the authority of the country's Supreme Court.
Right.
And that is the immediate cause of the current crisis. It's not the food shortages. It's not any problems to do with the security issues in Venezuela. The crisis has been provoked because the government is trying to defend the institutionality of the country. And it's so ironic that the right wing are claiming that there's an institutional crisis provoked by the government when it's provoked by their leadership's refusal in the National Assembly to abide by a very simple ruling of the Supreme Court. And until they abide by that ruling, the National Assembly is effectively acting illegally. You know, and what would happen in the United States if Congress refused to submit to the authority of the Supreme Court?
Yeah, right. Or the president. I mean, we've seen that happen to the 2000 election, for example.
Yeah.
Yep. The president was selected by the Supreme Court.
Yeah. And so... Well, and that is the fundamental immediate cause of the current protests in Venezuela, because the right wing refused to accept the legitimacy of the institutions in Venezuela, and they claim that they want elections, but in fact, it's far from clear what would happen even in a national presidential election at the moment, because if you read opinion polls in Venezuela, and over 60%, getting on for 70% of people approve of the measures that President Nicolas Maduro is taking to try and deal with the economic crisis, and they approve of his attempts to establish dialogue with the opposition. But the opposition don't want dialogue because that they know that time is running out for them, because the government has implemented measures in Venezuela that are slowly but surely redressing the economic difficulties that the opposition have provoked over the last 4 years now, since 2013.
Yeah.
Their persistent economic sabotage has failed. And the government is implementing policies that are winning back popular support that had been lost. And why we have to go back to when were the elections, the legislative elections in, was it at the end of 2015 as well?
Yes, that's right.
Where the Venezuelan opposition won an overwhelming majority in the National Assembly.
Well, they ended up with an overwhelming majority of representatives in the National Assembly, but the actual vote was not on the same scale. Under the Constitution, it's weighted.
I agree with you, and I was going to make that observation, that they didn't win that election because there was a massive surge in support for the opposition.
Right,
they won that election because the government, the Chavista government, was unable to mobilize the Chavista vote. And something like 2 million people that were expected to vote for the government didn't.
Stayed home.
And now... Now, ever since that time, it's an open question what those 2 million people would do if they had to vote again today. My bet, and the feeling of, I think, a majority of well-informed commentators in the region, is that the people in Venezuela have seen what the opposition stand for. They stand for kind of violence, intimidation. They have no social or economic agenda that is going to sustain or meet the needs of the overwhelming majority of people in Venezuela. And that's why the Venezuelan opposition at this moment are so desperate to provoke a crisis, because they know If there were an election in the next 3 or 4 months, and there are going to be elections before the end of the year and I think there are regional elections and municipal elections that are scheduled for later this year. And they're trying to preempt that electoral process because they fear that the Chavez vote will reestablish itself, and they'll be isolated again, as they have been for what, the last, getting on for 20 years now?
Almost 20 years. You know, looking at that particular point, this is something we've been discussing really since the elections of the National Assembly opposition majority in Venezuela and the election of Macri in Argentina, that once they become the government, because they have no actual program to offer, and they both ran very nebulous campaigns in terms of what they were promising. They were just promising not to be, you know, the people that were in power at the moment. And because they didn't promise to do what they used to do, some apparently thought that they weren't going to do the old stuff, but that's exactly what they have to offer. More looting, essentially, on behalf of corporations in the United States.
Absolutely.
And so now we're looking at a response coming from people at the ballot box at some point, and that's what they're afraid of.
And it's so easy to forget. I mean, people outside Venezuela forget that... The advances that the Bolivarian Revolution has achieved in Venezuela are tremendous. And the massively improved infrastructure over the last 20 years, massively improved access to healthcare, massive improvements in access for young people to higher education. I think it's 1.5 million houses for low-income families. You know, in a country with a population of, 22 million, something like that.
Yeah.
And so, and there are all those massive advantages and advances that the Bolivarian Republic has made possible for the great majority of people in Venezuela. And it's true. Again, nobody would deny that there's currently a socioeconomic crisis in Venezuela. But where does that come from? Most people in Venezuela are well aware that the crisis has been provoked by the right wing, because the right wing refused to dialogue. They know that on any kind of level playing field, they will not win an electoral victory enabling them to take power and implement their agenda. So they do various things. They've engaged in this campaign of economic sabotage. Right now, at this particular moment, they're engaging in terrorist attacks and a mass campaign to bring out their supporters. It's stupid to deny that the right-wing opposition have support. They've always had around 30 to 35% support.
Yeah.
But they've never been able to overcome electorally until those elections in 2015, the natural majority, because the Chavistas and the Bolivarian Republic as an idea do have a natural majority in Venezuela. It's just that if they fail to mobilize their voters, the right wing have enough voters to impose their agenda in some shape or form.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.